So I don't know who you are, but welcome to our, I'm calling it our daily dose. We're starting, I don't know how long it'll be. This is a much more casual thing. My kids are not contained. They may show up or be heard, and that's fine. Totally fine. So this is a much more casual situation. Feel free to post in the chat if you have questions as we go through. If you want to talk about anything in the text, we are going to go through 1 Peter. We're going to begin today with the introduction to 1 Peter. I don't have any idea how long this will be. I don't have any idea how it'll go. We're all stuck at home. Maybe actually some people are still working. Somebody was asking me if this would be available later on because they do still work. And yes, it will be available later. But, you know, I will be right back. I forgot my coffee. I even have coffee in my picture. I can't go without coffee. This is a new version of Christ and Coffee, as Lee would call it. Anyway, so 1 Peter, we're going to go over the introduction today, some introductory material. I think it'll be fine. I think it'll be good to go through. We've gone through this before. Oh man, that was a long time ago. I can't even remember when exactly. I have taught it at Dewey before. So some of this will be reviewed for some of you, and that's okay. For some, if you're like me, you may not even remember it, and that's cool. I did make new notes. I'm not just going through my same notes as before. So let's begin with the author. The author, of course, of 1 Peter is obviously Peter. Although I guess that's not necessarily obvious. But Peter, perhaps the most, I don't know, it's a kind of a toss-up between him and Paul as to who's the most famous apostle. Written later in his life, this is a later book, mid-60s AD. A lot of the other books have been written by this point. He's an older man. We're told, of course, in 1 Peter 5:1 that he's not only an apostle, but he's also serving as an elder at this time. He says in 1 Peter 5:1, we could read that real quick. So I exhort the elders among you as a fellow elder and witness of the sufferings of Christ, as well as a partaker in the glory that is going to be revealed, shepherd the flock of God. And he's talking, of course, not just as an apostle in this case, but as a fellow elder, one who is doing the work that you are doing, the shepherding work, shepherd the flock of God, right? And of course, we remember from Acts chapter 6 that the apostles had a very specific view in mind of their work, right? So the widows were being overlooked in the daily distribution of the food, and they say, we can't take care of this. Our job is to the ministry of the word. We need to find somebody else. But at some point, obviously, they had taken on another aspect of work, the elders, because of course we know in Jerusalem there were elders that were not apostles, right? We had James and we had some of the other elders when Paul's going back and forth to the Jerusalem councils. So there's the apostles and the elders. At some point, as the apostles grew older, I think it became natural for them to take on the work of an elder as well, which is different from the work of an apostle and a minister of the word. That idea, we should not leave the ministry of the word to serve tables in Acts chapter 6. That was a very specific kind of task. They also took on the shepherding role of the elders, at least Peter did. I don't think Paul ever did, of course, but Peter certainly did take on this role of an elder. So that's, let's see here. My keyboard is very loud. So let's talk about the audience. Peter, who's Peter writing to? You can, if you want to, again, just checking chat. Okay. The audience, the elect exiles of the dispersion, that'll be different depending on what translation of the Bible you're using. If you look, that's the ESV to the elect exiles of the dispersion. If you look at the New American Standard Version, to those who reside as aliens scattered throughout, and then he lists those different places. You look at the New International Version, God's elect exiles, Actually, the New International adds a comma, which is significant. To God's elect, comma, exiles scattered throughout the provinces. This is, instead of saying elect exiles, that is elect modifying the word exiles, he's separate, the New International version translators have decided to separate those two qualities. They are elect and they are exiles. The New King James, to the pilgrims of the dispersion, elect according, and then he lists the places, and then elect according to the foreknowledge of God the Father. So we're getting the same flavor as we go through here. Who is he talking about? The dispersion, the diaspora, as it is perhaps more academically termed. Who is he talking about there? Well, we have perhaps the Jews dispersed in the two major Old Testament captivities, right? So they were taken into captivity, right? And then they were taken into captivity and they were eventually brought back, but a lot of people stayed. A lot of the Jews stayed in those places. They made families, they married, they had children, they had grandchildren, and they formed a life in these captive places, and they just sort of stuck around. But they were still Jews, right? Now, over time, of course, over centuries, unless they were really specifically intentional, which they may have been very specifically intentional about not marrying, that, of course, would have, they would have diluted their genetic Jewness, right? But then maybe they kept the traditions and they kept the teachings and they kept the old law. They kept all, maybe kept all of that. The other possibility, of course, is that he's talking about the Jews dispersed at the beginning of Acts chapter 8, right? We remember in Acts chapter 8 what happened there, right? We can just read it. I don't need to know, to paraphrase. Acts chapter 8, verse 1, of course, after Stephen's death. And Saul approved of his execution, and there arose on that day a great persecution against the church in Jerusalem, and they were scattered throughout all the regions of Judea and Samaria. Now, why it's perhaps not necessarily referring to Acts chapter 8, of course, is he lists the regions, which are not listed in Acts chapter 8, but maybe they scattered further out into the regions that are listed in 1 Peter. Or maybe he's just talking to the Jews who had been dispersed previously, who are now living in these foreign places. But either way, who's he talking to? He's writing to people who are not where they belong, right? That is the point. He's writing to these Jews who are living in these other places. Now, he's not just writing to Jews, right? And we're going to see this interesting idea as we go through the text of 1 Peter. One of the main themes is this idea of not belonging. So he begins with the elect exiles of the dispersion. And I think that word diaspora would have definitely evoked the Jews in the minds of the readers. But he's going to apply that idea, elect exiles, to all Christians as we go through later in the book. So he's writing to people who do not belong where they are, who are perhaps in a place where they feel like they shouldn't be. And I think maybe we feel that sometimes. This is, of course, going to be one of the themes. This is a letter, ultimately, for discouraged Christians. That's going to be the point as we go through 1 Peter. This is a letter for discouraged Christians. This is a letter for those who are feeling left out or feeling isolated. The word isolation is interesting, especially in our context, right? People who feel isolated from their neighbors and their coworkers, people who don't feel like they really fit in with those people. But ultimately, we're going to see that he has a deeper meaning, a deeper point for this idea of exile, of one who does not belong in a particular location. So that's the audience. The themes of 1 Peter, we're going to see the Christian and the suffering of Christ. A lot of stuff about suffering, various kinds of trials, how we should respond to those trials, the example, and ultimately he's going to tie it back to the example of Christ. Your suffering, Christ suffered. What does that mean? How should that tie together? And then ultimately how suffering should bring the church together. A lot of stuff in 1 Peter about suffering, about the suffering of not only the Christian, but the suffering of Christ. And if we just go through 1 Peter, we can sort of see this. This is a more casual thing, so I can do some different stuff here. We can just see this in chapter 1, verse 6. Then this you rejoice, though if necessary you have been for a little while, if necessary, you've been grieved by various trials. Let's see here. We can go down to chapter 2, verse 11, to abstain from the passions of the flesh, which wage war against your soul. We could think about chapter 3, verse 13. Now, who is there to harm you if you are zealous for what is good? But even if you should suffer for righteousness' sake, chapter 4, verse 1, since therefore Christ suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves with the same way of thinking. Chapter 4, verse 12, do not be surprised at the fiery trial when it comes upon you. So there's a lot of suffering in 1 Peter. A lot of things about suffering, and that's going to be one of the major themes. Ultimately, how should that suffering both draw us closer to Christ and draw us together with each other, unify us with each other? And again, I think particularly apt in our modern context, as we are all undergoing a shared trial, as it were, for sure a shared trial. And how should that bring us together? How should that bring us more in tune with God and with his will? The second theme of 1 Peter, the Christian and the world. And he's going to talk a lot, again, this idea of elect exile, right? What does it mean for the Christian to be somewhere where they don't belong? What does that mean? How should that interact? When we don't belong in the world, and he's talking to a very specific set of Christians, and he lists the people there, right? But this is a letter that's going to apply to everybody. When we don't belong, how can we affect the world? The world where we don't belong, right? That's the question. How should we interact with a world that we don't belong in? That doesn't just apply to the Jews who were dispersed in the captivities. That doesn't just apply to the Jews who were dispersed after the death of Stephen. Excuse me. This applies in general to every Christian, right? Every Christian who has ever lived faces this question ultimately. If I'm a Christian and I believe that I belong with God, I believe that my citizenship is in heaven, what do I do now? For the next, I'm 30. Let's say I live to 75, if that's the average. So 45 more years. What do I do for the next 45 years? As I'm stuck here where I don't belong, I am an exile on the earth. How do I interact with a place that I don't belong in a way that is meaningful and helpful and beneficial? This is one of the things that Peter's going to talk about at length as we go through 1 Peter. The third theme, there's more than this. I've sort of generally broken up in very broad strokes. Holy living. And this is a more sort of nitty-gritty, detail-oriented idea, right? And this is sort of we have theology, we have practical application. This is the practical application. What exactly should I do? How should I not act? How does my holiness impact others? These are questions, right, of practicality. Literally, in my day-to-day life, what should I be doing? How should I be living? That's one of the things that we're going to see as we go through 1 Peter. He introduces these broad, grand themes of suffering, the unity of Christ, the emulation of Christ's example, and the fact that you don't belong where you're supposed to be, and you're exiles on the earth. These broad applicable themes, but then bringing it down to the practical application of life. What sort of things should I be doing? What sort of things should I not be doing? This will be, I think, something more practical for us to think about. So, as we are 15 minutes in, let's look at the first two verses, and we will be done. Peter, an apostle of Jesus Christ, to those who are elect exiles of the dispersion in Pontus, Galatia, Cappadocia, Asia, Bithynia, according to the foreknowledge of God the Father, in the sanctification of the Spirit, for obedience to Jesus Christ and for the sprinkling with his blood, may grace and peace be multiplied to you. A pretty standard opening, right? But a couple of things I want to note about these verses. One, elect exiles. Again, we looked at the different versions, the different translations. They are elect, chosen. They are significant in some way. And how are they elect and chosen and significant? They are according to the foreknowledge of God the Father, right? God, who knows that all things that will come to pass, who has perfect foreknowledge, who nonetheless knows that there's going to be suffering, who knows that there's going to be difficulty for his people, yet we have been sanctified, we have been elected, we have been chosen in our exile, the place that we don't belong. We don't belong here. Why? Because God chose us, right? We don't belong here specifically because of God's foreknowledge, who in his foreknowledge set out the plan that he would have to call people to himself and those who would choose to obey. It's because of that foreknowledge that we are elect exiles. If we were not chosen by God, if we did not have the sanctification of the Spirit, we wouldn't be exiles, would we? We would just be like everybody else. We would belong here. And ultimately, that might have some benefit to our lives on earth. That might have some benefit to maybe the suffering that we undergo. We might have less suffering or a different kind of suffering. Might have a benefit in how the world treats us. But ultimately, we know, right, that that is eternally detrimental. The very fact that we are exiles is the thing that makes us look forward to heaven, right? The thing that makes us look forward to perfect unity with the Father, the Son, and the Spirit. And I will say it's the thing that makes us draw closer together with the church, right? Is the fact that we are exiles. If we were not exiles, we would not cling to fellow Christians as much as we perhaps should. So as we go through 1 Peter, I hope that this will be a beneficial study. We have 12 concurrent viewers. I hope this has been beneficial to you guys. As we go through this, I think it's fitting perhaps to end where Peter ends. May grace and peace, I say ends, we're really where Peter begins. May grace and peace be multiplied to you as we are all going through this time together. Just a little bit of encouragement to start your day perhaps. I hope that this will be helpful as we go through. These will be available to view online, and I will be putting these on the podcast as well. So let's end with a prayer as we all begin our day, as we think about living in a world that we don't belong. God, we thank you for Peter's writings. We thank you for his example as an apostle and an elder. We thank you for his instruction and encouragement to us. We thank you for choosing us, for calling us out of the world, for giving us a place to belong that is not here. As we struggle in this life, give us strength and peace and grace. Help us to remember the sanctification of your Spirit. Help us to draw close to one another in this time as we seek to positively impact those around us who are lost. Give us strength today to live holy lives, to live as those who do not belong in a fallen world. Give us wisdom to know how to do so and strength to see it through. In Jesus' name, amen.